This is the Commodity Culture Podcast, where we interview prominent investors, fund managers, analysts, and company CEOs to give you an edge when it comes to investing in the commodity space. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Commodity Culture. My name is Jesse Day, and on this show, we want to make you a better investor in the commodity space. But before we dive in, standard disclaimer, nothing here is investment advice. Do your own due diligence. And today's guest is an author who writes about economics and financial markets and the founder of the Commodity Discovery Fund. We're going to be getting his thoughts on several commodities, along with the broad market and how geopolitics play a role in all of this. It's Willem Middelkoop. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for the invitation. Good to be back.
Yes. Now, I want to start off with geopolitics here and what appears to be some escalating global conflict. I'm wondering, as we see this war potentially expand between Iran and Israel, other players potentially getting involved, you know, if the U.S. gets directly involved, obviously, that's a huge development. How far do you think this escalation could potentially go? And if things do really turn into a World War III type of scenario with the U.S. getting directly involved, how do you think that could impact commodities?
If you listen to previous interviews I've been giving in the last 2 years, in a few of those interviews, I already mentioned that we are entering a World War III type of conflict, but it will be an all different type of conflict compared to the First and the Second World War. This is much more a hybrid situation. And In 2013, I wrote The Big Reset, and The Big Reset has this thesis that we're in a financial endgame for the current dollar system. Every 80 to 90 years, we experience a big change in the financial system, in the geopolitical situation, in which we get a new leader, new leader in the world. Now we're in the dollar system. The dollar system started in 1944 with Bretton Woods. Before that, we had the pound sterling as our world's reserve currency, and we had the British Empire. And now, of course, we have China becoming so powerful that the U.S. Becomes a little frightened. And you have this huge conflict where the Western alliance, you could say. So the U.S. and the Western friends, including Australia and Japan and South Korea, are confronted by a huge bloc coming from the East. It's the BRICS bloc, the BRICS countries. But the BRICS cooperation is getting much larger now. You have so many new countries willing to join the BRICS bloc. And for me, World War III is like the confrontation between this Western U.S. bloc, dollar-based, dollar-centered bloc, and the Eastern BRICS bloc, which is working on their own currency, which working on their own financial system, which working on their own trading system. And for us as commodity investors, and that's why I spent so much time researching this and thinking about this, I think commodities, and especially gold and silver, will be part of the new system coming from the East. And Zoltan Pozsar, who's this brilliant analyst who was with Credit Suisse, well, Credit Suisse is not there anymore. That's a great example of what happens in a reset. You know, the banks like Credit Suisse fail. And Zoltan Pozsar wrote 2 years ago that we're witnessing the birth of a new monetary system coming from the East, centered around commodities.
Very interesting. Now, where do you think we are in this financial endgame? Obviously, we saw some rumors last year that the BRICS were going to announce a gold-backed currency. That didn't quite come to fruition. We now have BRICS holding a number of meetings this year in Russia with member nations. Alistair MacLeod has pointed to the fact that he believes part of this process is developing some sort of framework for eventually launching or announcing the launch of an alternate form of potential gold-backed or commodities-backed currency, which could be happening later this year. Is this something that's imminent, or is this something that could be years or decades away, in your view?
When we talk about resets, monetary resets, which happen every, 80, 90 years, or maybe you could say every 40, 50 years, because in 1971, we took the dollar off the gold standard, and that could be called Bretton Woods 2.0. But these changes only take place once in your lifetime, almost. So and people always expect these changes to come very soon and be very abrupt, like it's binary, it's zero or it's a one, but it's more like a process. And now we're in the end game of the current dollar system. So we're in the final inning of the current dollar system. But this doesn't mean that the dollar will collapse within the next 2 to 3 years. But 10 years from now, we'll conclude that the power of the almighty dollar is quite a bit less than it was 10 years ago. So we're very early in the game, which the BRICS club is starting to play. So that's very early. And it will take several years and maybe even a decade before this BRICS alliance will become really powerful, and so powerful that we in the West need to walk and talk their book instead of the US book. And we are here in Europe, and we're somewhere in between the West and the East. Currently, Europe is still firmly in the US bloc, the dollar-centered bloc. But there's so much happening and coming from the East that I think in Europe we'll have to decide whether we will start cooperating with the BRICS countries and stop seeing them as their enemy.
Very fascinating breakdown there. I want to talk about the broad market for a moment, because over the past, let's say, few years, people have been pounding the table that there's an imminent collapse coming for the broad market for the S&P and the NASDAQ. Obviously, last year, we saw quite a downturn, but then things really picked up again and continuously reaching all-time highs in both indices. We are starting to see some weakness in the S&P in particular over the past couple of days, quite a drawdown. But it always seems like there's blips along the way, but seems to recover and back to business as usual. What do you see when you look at the S&P and the NASDAQ? Are these charts, in your view, that have strength for the long term?
You could analyze those charts by pointing to, let's say, Elliott wave count, that we're in the fifth. We're trying to set a top in the fifth wave, which is the end of a very long, bull market. Actually, the bull market for the Dow Jones started in 1942 at the depth of the Second World War, when the Dow Jones was trading at 100. And it shows, you know, markets bottom not after a war, but in a war. And then we've had this incredible rise for the Dow Jones to a 30,000, over 30,000. And now we could say that there's a major top developing in Western equity markets. But since we have so much debasement of currencies and with so much money printing, I wouldn't be surprised that stocks could go even higher, not because everything goes well in the economy, but look what happened to Venezuela, the stock exchange there, and look what happened to the Zimbabwean stock exchange. They set all new records because of hyperinflation and debasement of currency. So we saw the same during the Weimar Germany years in the 1920s. But I agree, the stock market, the broader stock market, seems to be topping out. Also, if you look at valuations and other indicators. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the start of a long and strong correction over the next few years, and that could actually start in the second half this year. Maybe we set the top already, but a process of bottoming and topping after such a long move will also take many months and many quarters and maybe longer. But the risk on the downside are becoming more apparent. And I think the commodity space is totally different. Commodity stocks do poorly when tech stocks do well. We've seen that at the late 1990s as well. So I think commodity stocks have been bottoming out and have just started a revaluation process to the upside, while tech stocks and the broader market is in the process of topping out and could see more serious corrections. But that could take years as well to play out. So I don't expect a crash in the very near term.
Well, let's hone in on gold here. If the scenario you described plays out over the course of, let's say, the next decade or so, the US dollar loses its reserve currency status, we see the BRICS nations start to transact maybe with a gold-backed currency, commodities-backed currency, or we see gold in some form or another reintroduced into the global monetary system. Does that mean at the moment gold is still quite undervalued relative to what the potential price that it could be as we look forward into the future?
Yeah, the price of gold always follows the amount of, well, liquidity in the system, the amount of money in circulation, the amount of debt. Based on this ratio, gold could go much higher. And in a official, more formal gold revaluation plan where gold is being reintroduced into the system, you could expect gold being revalued even north of $10,000 per ounce. I think currently we're in a revaluation process where market forces bring the gold price up. Today, we're reaching 2,400 again. I wouldn't be surprised to see $3,000 gold within the next 12 months. Even Citigroup has published their prediction towards that target, I think, earlier this week. And silver is especially of interest because silver is still trading almost 50% below its 1980 and 2011 top of $50. So there's so much catching up to do for silver. And we run the Commodity Discovery Fund, and we are adding to our silver positions quite massively in the last few weeks because we see many indicators that silver could have a big run. And if you look at the volume indicators, the volume of trading in the SIL and SILJ, you see a very strong jump in the volume, even much more than in the GDX.
Well, let's touch on silver then, because traditionally what I've heard from most experts in the sector is that silver tends to play catch up with gold and then surpass it in the latter stages of a precious metals bull market. However, we've seen quite a strong performance put in by silver recently, sitting at around $28 as we speak, seeming to kind of move in tandem with gold. Is silver performing differently this time around than it traditionally does? What are your thoughts there?
No, not at all. Silver tends to have a lag on development of the gold price. So it's not too strange that silver will be breaking out a few months after we've seen a gold break out of the gold price. And you're right, once this rally starts in silver, it often ends up, going much higher than the rally you see in gold from percentage point of view. So silver could easily go up 50%, while a 50% move for gold will be, that would be quite something. And especially if you look at the gold, the silver shares in previous rallies, like we've seen in 2020, 2016, the silver shares on average jumped between 100, 200, or even over 200% in a relatively short time frame because there's so much leverage there. And especially now that valuations of silver stocks have decreased so much in the last 4 years, there's a lot of upside.
Well, I'm wondering if you're seeing from your perspective in the Commodity Discovery Fund, if you speak to institutional investors and you're seeing any sort of interest growing when it comes to the precious metals space, because obviously if we start to see more institutional money move into especially something like silver, that could be quite significant. Have you had any discussions like that, and what are you seeing out there?
Well, our investor base is high net worth and ultra high net worth family offices. We don't meet a lot of institutional people. We try to avoid that. I can assure you that institutional investors are not looking at silver. They might be looking at gold now, but they will play it very safe, the larger names. I expect that's why we took a position in Newmont Mining. It went down so much. And when the generalist investors return, they will buy Barrick and Newmont and the GDX. But if we look at our investor base, high net worth, ultra high net worth, they're much more ahead of the curve. They've done their homework, many of them. They see the value out there. They're watching all these reset developments. They see what's coming from the East, what's happening with the BRICS countries. And many of these people, these investors, are trying to grow their positions in commodities and also in precious metals. And some of them are buying quite a bit of silver, even physical silver. So it's more like the smarter money is really recognizing the value here. We don't spend a lot of money on marketing and advertising, but after the 2020 COVID crash, and then when the inflation arrived, investors really came knocking on our door, and we even had to change our investment was always possible in our fund for 25K, but we set it to 50K because there were too many small investors wanting to get an allocation into a commodity-based fund.
When it comes to the gold, and well, let's focus on gold miners first. Obviously, some of them have woken up, the majors definitely, along with the price of gold. Is there still an opportunity there, do you think, in the majors, let's say? Or is now a time to potentially wait for a pullback? What are your thoughts on the gold mining space at present?
No, there's still so much value out there. Look at Newmont. We started to build our position in Newmont Mining around 30. We even bought around 29. And I think we're around 40 now. So we only had the first recovery. Newmont could easily double in the next 12 to 18 months. Same goes for Barrick. Same goes for all these shares. So we had a pullback last week. Actually, I was just looking at some graphs. As we speak, we see a breakout for gold and silver of the last correction in the last few days. So I think this was only a temporary correction. We might see a next leg up for the precious metals. And as said, there's still so much value in the listed mining companies who have these gold and silver projects.
And so when it comes to the silver miners, what do you look for there? Because finding a pure play silver miner is obviously much more difficult. Gold, you can kind of take your pick. There's a huge amount of stocks to choose from. So how do you find and evaluate silver stocks?
It's very hard. Actually, we gave up. So we just buy the SILJ. In our portfolio, we only have a very few individual silver names, IL Silver being the best. We concentrate on the best discoveries, the tier one, tier two discoveries worldwide, metal agnostic. So in silver, we only invested in the very few silver discoveries, which are over 100 million ounces of silver in their first resource estimate. IR Silver just published their resource estimate is over 300 million ounces of silver discovered in Morocco, a great country to be mining. cheap country to be mining. So we have, that's our largest position. We have a position Abra Silver. That's quite a good discovery as well, but that's in Argentina. But most of our investments in the silver space is just the ETFs, because we know from experience, once silver starts to reevaluate higher, the whole basket goes up, and even the worst companies in this space will go up most because they came down so much.
I want to shift to the Fed here, because it seems like they're completely unable to tame inflation. Recent CPI prints coming in hotter than expected, and the numbers are ridiculous anyways. They're not even real. They're so what hedonically adjusted, whatever you want to call it, whatever fancy term you want to use for basically lying to everybody. Can they afford to cut rates here, where people are talking about, you know, they're going to be forced to cut, they must cut? Can they afford to do this? Or do you think that they're just going to move the goalpost and suddenly say, well, you know, 4%, 3% inflation really isn't so bad. It's probably actually good for the economy. What are your thoughts?
Well, if you have so much debt, then inflation eventually is good. So, but they, of course, they're stuck. It's very hard for the Federal Reserve to do the right thing now. And I think the Federal Reserve is just waiting to see what breaks first. And once markets are, or parts of the system are starting to break down, they will react and start lowering interest rates. But I agree, given the latest inflation numbers, they still have to wait. But the economy is not very strong. The official numbers might look good, but there's so much in the economy which is not going well, especially in commercial real estate, credit card debts, car loans. And I expect things to start breaking down within the next 6 to 12 months. And this autumn, winter might be, well, might become a bit more difficult. And that would explain a more broader correction as well. And then the Fed will need to come and step in again. And don't forget that there's another huge problem about financing the budget deficits in the US. And there are not enough willing buyers anymore out there for the treasuries. So the markets need to be supported in a big way. And this is, we're talking trillions and trillions. And that will all play out in the next 12 to 18 months. So expect more QE to arrive pretty soon.
And I'm wondering, from your perspective in Europe, are you watching what the ECB is doing? Are you watching the European economy? Wondering what you're seeing there. I'm in Europe as well. I'm in Serbia, which is outside the EU, but our currency is actually pegged to the euro. So I think we would be affected as well in terms of a downturn there. So what are you seeing when it comes to the European economy at the moment?
Well, of course, we watch it because we live here. But what happens in the US and what happens with the BRICS alliance is more important from a system point of view. I think the ECB will be pressured as well, will feel pressured as well to start lowering rates in the next 12 to 18 months, because I think the economy will start to weaken a bit more. Of course, price of oil and copper and many commodities are starting to rise again, so this will increase inflation pressures. I'm afraid that inflation comes in waves, often three waves. We've had the first. I think the second wave is starting to materialize. So it will be very interesting to watch how the central bankers are starting to change their policies.
Well, one commodity which would appear to be a strong performer no matter what happens with the economy and markets is uranium. And that's simply because this shift to nuclear energy seems to be happening across the board and is moving forward. The amount of reactor extensions, restarts, buildouts happening around the world is quite significant, along with extremely tight supply, especially after we've seen the world's largest uranium producer, Kazatomprom, miss targets last year. they're going to miss this year, it appears, and into the future, it's kind of very murky there. How do you see the current setup for uranium?
Yeah, it's very positive. We've been watching the uranium market for years, pointing to the bottoming out in 2015, 16, 17. Build a long position, especially in NextGen Energy, who's responsible for the most valuable new uranium discovery in decades. The company grew from a market cap of 30, 40 million when we first invested in it to over 3 billion, I think, now. We still maintain our core position, fortunately. If we look at supply and demand for uranium, you're right. We currently have some 400 nuclear reactors in operation worldwide. Another 400 are being planned or built. So you'll see a huge increase of demand, and there are not enough new uranium discoveries, and the prices have been so low that there wasn't any incentive to open any mines. The contrary, many of the producers closed down projects. Some of them are being restarted, some of them can be restarted, but I think uranium prices will stay strong. This will stay, uranium will stay in a bull market, and there's more money to be made because it's such a small space. And the quality names, you know, are very few. We have a few of these individual names. And then, of course, we also invest in the URA, the uranium ETF.
And speaking of uranium, we saw some jurisdictional risk come into play in Niger with the coup that occurred there, causing a collapse in the prices of a lot of the equities. There was a recovery, and then the political situation became further muddied by the government in Niger saying, okay, we don't want anything to do with the U.S. military. We're canceling our agreements with them. So now things are very unclear in the region, and we saw a collapse in the equities again. Is Niger a place where you would avoid at the moment? Is it a buying opportunity for those who have some risk capital? And how do you assess jurisdictional risk when it comes to the mining space in general?
Well, we can accept quite a bit of risk because we spread our over 100 million euros assets under management over, let's say, almost 100 different investments. But certain countries we don't touch. We don't touch Venezuela or Russia or China. And we don't touch Niger or Mali, but we do investments in the Western Africas, but like Guinea and Cote d'Ivoire, and we feel comfortable there. But Mali and Niger, it's a different part of the world where we don't feel too comfortable to invest.
Interesting. Yeah, I was looking at a gold producer that had most of their operations in Mali, and decided to look elsewhere once I started to look into that country. So I definitely hear you there. Although I am invested in Global Atomic in Niger, just holding for now. Definitely not deploying more capital with the situation like it is.
We wish you luck.
Well, yeah, it's not a large position, so all good. Well,
thank
you so much.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Willem. A fantastic conversation. For those who want to learn more, could you fill us in a little more on the Commodity Discovery Fund? You mentioned 50K minimum investment. Any other information you could give us there? And if there's anywhere else you want to direct people online, feel free.
Yeah, we're a Dutch-based fund, but we are open for investors worldwide, even from the US and Canada. We're a UCITS fund, highly regulated. We have almost 2,000 individual investors, mainly from the Dutch-speaking countries. I'm quite active on Twitter. You can follow me there. And I have a Patreon account, which I will send you the link for the show notes for people who want to stay on top of the whole reset process and developments.
Great. Well, I'll put links to all of that in the description below. Thank you so much, Willem, once again, for coming on and sharing your knowledge with the audience.
Was a pleasure.
Commodity Culture is a podcast that covers investing in commodities and natural resources. If you'd like to hear more, be sure to subscribe so you are always alerted of the latest episodes.